This is HeartWise, offering practical tips and time-proven guidelines to make your life healthier, happier, and more fulfilling. Today you'll learn simple Bible-based principles for building and maintaining optimum mental and physical health, all while deepening your relationship with your Creator. I'm your HeartWise host, Charles Mills. If you're a frequent listener to this program, you'll recognize the name of our guest today. Dr. Michael Greger is the driving force behind the very popular website NutritionFacts.org, is a much sought-after speaker, and the author of How Not to Die, a book that's experiencing the global reach of the International Space Station. It's always a pleasure to have him on our show to talk about the latest cutting-edge science when it comes to health and nutrition. Dr. Greger, welcome back to HeartWise.
So glad to be back.
I've been watching your DVD, Latest in Clinical Nutrition, Volume 34, and what I'd like to do is simply state a conclusion or a topic and then let you dive right in into why we need to know this stuff. And this first one took me by surprise. You go shopping. You buy your purchases. You're checking out at the counter. The lady or the man hands you a receipt, and you're saying we better not have hand cream on our hands at that moment. What are we talking about here?
Yeah, in fact, any skincare products, hand sanitizers, lotions, soaps, sunscreens, basically all of these products contain chemicals that enhance skin penetration. Now, I mean, look, that's what you want with a hand lotion.
Right,
you want
right.
some of those compounds to get into your skin to actually help you, but the problem is receipts. So we're talking about thermal paper. So that's cash register receipts, like at the grocery store, luggage tags, bus, train, lottery tickets, anything that's printed out. The way they do that, the way the printing process works, is there's a little heating element that heats the paper, and wherever the paper is heated, it turns black thanks to this chemical called bisphosphine. Let's just say BPA for short.
Okay.
to keep the scientific jargon down. So thermal paper is about 1 to 2% BPA by weight. So there's a lot of that chemical. And you say, well, okay, what's the big deal? Well, on intact skin with no skincare products, there's very little of that BPA is absorbed into your body. So as long as you, you know, wash your hands, it's not a problem. But if you actually practicing good hand hygiene, using hand sanitizer or something, then you handle a receipt or using a skin lotion so that you can force some of that BPA inside your body. And the problem with that is that BPA levels in the bloodstream, you can measure, it's easy to measure how much BPA someone's exposed to by measuring BPA levels in someone's urine. Those who have high BPA levels in their urine have higher rates of heart disease and diabetes and obesity and impaired liver function, immune function, kidney function, inflammation, infertility, thyroid function, all sorts of, I mean, it's like you name it, even aggressiveness, hyperactivity, impaired learning. And so, you know, this is not stuff that we want in our bodies. And typically, one thinks of this BPA, this plastics compound, in polycarbonate plastics. For example, countries around the world have banned baby bottles and sippy cups that contain this BPA product. But it turns out it's not just bad for infants, it's bad for everybody. So you say, well, fine, I have a stainless steel or glass water bottle. I don't use plastic bottles. So what's the big deal? The big deal is if you're using these skin products and you're touching these receipts, then you can actually get the BPA absorbed straight through your skin into your bloodstream. And so what you can do is just, if you don't need the receipt, then don't take it.
Okay.
Just, you know, they say, here's a receipt. You say, oh, no, thank you. Don't need it. You ask them to recycle it or something.
Yeah.
And so then it doesn't matter what's on your hand because you're not actually touching it. Unfortunately, these poor people that work at the register, cashiers, have really high levels in their bloodstream. And I encourage, if you do work in one of these facilities, to wear gloves because you're handling them all day and you can get really quite high levels, even if you're not using skincare products, just because you're handling it so often.
Well, you know, I've seen some of these stores that have hand sanitizer pumps right there near the cash register. When you come in, you can clean your hands off, and there you go.
And that's great. I mean, I'm fully in support because, particularly, look, it's flu season right now, right?
Yes.
We want to have clean hands. And so really, after touching public surfaces, we should hand sanitize. I carry a little either alcohol gel or alcohol spray with me to sanitize my own hands. If you can't find a way to wash your hands frequently after touching public services. So, I mean, I think it's fantastic. It's a great service they're providing, as long as we're not handling the receipts afterwards.
All right, very good. We're talking to Dr. Michael Greger here. He's from nutritionfacts.org. We'll talk a little bit more about that website in just a minute. The next thing that caught my attention on this DVD, Dr. Greger, is children and cholesterol. I mean, that's like an oxymoron. You would not put children and cholesterol together, but you're saying the science is telling us a very different picture.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's important to realize that atherosclerosis begins in childhood. And so what are called fatty streaks in our arteries, which turn into the atherosclerotic plaques that then kill us. By age 10, most children raised on the standard American diet already have these fatty streaks within their arteries, which turn into plaques in their 20s, get worse in their 30s, and then can start killing us off. So if there's anyone listening to this program right now older than age 10, then it's not about whether or not to eat healthy to prevent heart disease. It's whether or not you want to reverse the heart disease you likely already have, whether you've been diagnosed or not. These studies were done on the children that had tragically died in accidents, for example, and on autopsy found this atherosclerosis, even in young children. The original studies were done on Korean War soldiers back many decades, about a half century ago, found that young men, you know, average age 21, 22, had severe atherosclerosis. Some of their coronary arteries already blocked up to 90%. And look, these are young, healthy servicemen. So that's what really started us down the path. That was a big wake-up call. And then when they looked at even younger children and adolescents, we still found the beginnings of this disease. So that's why it's critical that we start eating healthy as early as possible. You say, well, wait a second. If heart disease can be reversed with this healthy plant-based diet, then can't I just eat all the pepperoni pizza I want? And then look, as soon as I get the little chest pain, as soon as I get bad enough heart disease that's clogging off my heart muscle, that is causing me pain to walk upstairs, fine. Then I'll get on board. Then I'll start eating healthy. I'll just reverse my heart disease. The problem with that strategy is for about half the people, men and women, that die of heart disease, they die of something called sudden cardiac death, meaning they didn't even know they had heart disease, and their first symptom was their last. They were dead within 60 minutes of them experiencing their first symptom. And then it's too late, yes, right? An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, but there is no cure for dead. That's why we need to start early, starting our families early, getting people on board to prevent this buildup of cholesterol within our arteries in the first place.
Now, Dr. Greger, aren't children at the very, very, very beginning of their lives fed an animal product, mother's milk?
That is the healthiest animal product there is, because it's the one that was meant by, we were designed to eat. If you think about it, but then what happens? We get weaned, right?
Yeah.
So if you're thinking, well, that's natural, what's unnatural? How about not only drinking milk after weaning as an adult? That's kind of strange. And then to drink milk of a whole other species,
that's completely strange.
All right. So the number one source of saturated fat actually isn't steak. It's actually cheese, actually dairy, dairy products in general. So I mean, perhaps it's no surprise that they play such a role in some of our diseases, not only heart disease, but in the case of dairy, prostate cancer as well. So, you know, it's never too early to start eating healthier. It's never too late to start eating healthier, too. We can reverse a disease even late in life, but it's better to treat the cause and prevent it in the first place.
Absolutely. Very good. Next item here, and I'm just going to read what I wrote down here, and you'll just have to jump in and clarify this for me. Catching obesity and how your dog can help fight it. Tell me about that.
Yeah, well, this is really quite fascinating. So there's been, you know, obviously a tremendous rise in obesity.
Yes.
And one of the contributing factors may be our gut bacteria, our healthy gut flora, mm-hmm. that can play in extracting calories. So some people's gut flora can extract more calories from what they eat than they're not. So two people eat the exact same thing, and one person can gain more weight because of differences in gut flora. And there are some gut flora that affect how we metabolize fat. There's this hormone called fasting-induced adipose factor. Basically, when we're fasting, our body has to stop storing fat and instead start burning it off. And so that's where this hormone comes in, fasting-induced adipose factor. It's one of the hormones that signals our body to switch over, start burning fat. And so that's how our gut flora manages our weight. Some bacteria repress this hormone, therefore increasing fat storage. Whereas our good bacteria, our fiber-eating bacteria, the ones that secrete these short-chain fatty acids called butyrate, for example, we feed them with fiber. They actually upregulate this hormone and so can actually affect how, whether we're storing fat or whether we're burning fat, based on having the fiber-eating bacteria in our gut and eating the fiber, right? And how do you get fiber-eating bacteria in your gut? You eat fiber. You foster the growth of good bacteria. You eat bad food, you're going to foster the growth of bacteria that consume bad food. You eat good food, you're going to foster the growth of the good guys. And so that's what we have to do. And where's fiber found? In abundance, whole plant food. So the more we can eat, the better. And so what's interesting, which is kind of the second part of your question here, so basically you can look at people's gut flora and you can compare what kind of gut bacteria people who are obese have to people who are thin, to who are skinny have.
Right.
And then you can say, the people who are fat have more of this type of bacteria and the other ones have more of this. Okay, you can't prove cause and effect. That's an association. That's a link. But how do we know one causes the other, right? I mean, maybe people who are obese are eating lots of bad food, and that's what's doing. Maybe it has nothing to do with their weight. There's no causal link. But the way that we've actually proven cause and effect is something a little unappetizing called fecal transplant, right? Well, wait a second. What if we take gut bacteria from a skinny person and we put it in the gut of an obese person? What happens, even without a change in diet, they lose weight.
Amazing.
And if you put the gut bacteria of an obese person and a skinny person, they start gaining weight, even though they haven't changed their diet. Now, the way they do that, we won't have to go into details, but that proves that, wow, these gut bacteria really do play an important role in our metabolism. And when people live together, they share, basically bacteria jump from one person to another person,
right.
Inadvertently, no matter how sanitary we are, it kind of gets around the household. And if you actually add a dog to the mix, so if you have a dog in your household, then you actually the gut bacteria of people in the house actually gets even closer. Basically, the dog acts like a bridge to pass bacteria back and forth. And that actually can be beneficial if we have pets in the house. Oh, our dog Rose is barking as we speak. But having pets in the house decreases risk of allergies and respiratory conditions, other immune disorders when we get older. And children with dogs are significantly healthier. And part of that protection from respiratory disease may be pet exposure from having these different good gut bacteria. And so that's raised this question. There's this famous study that looked at 12,000 people, found that people have a much higher chance of becoming obese if they have friends who are obese or became obese.
Mm-hmm.
And so we used to think, that's just, it's socially contagious, meaning if you all go out to eat the same fattening food together, that's how having obese friends could, increase your risk of becoming obese as well, because you're eating the same kind of bad food together, perhaps. But given now what we know about the role of these gut bacteria that can be transferred from one person to another, maybe part of obesity is truly contagious, kind of like catching a cold contagious, which goes back to our hand sanitizer question. So we want to continue to live sanitary lives and wash our hands a lot while eating lots of fiber-rich food.
Oh, my goodness. You heard it here first, listener, right here. The dog can help with obesity. All right, we'll take a short break, and when we come back, more with Dr. Michael Greger from NutritionFacts.org. Lots of good things on the horizon, so stay right where you are. Thank you.
I'm Dr. James Markham with your biblical prescription for life. A patient recently came up to me in the office and asked me this question, "Dr. Markham, do you really believe that God heals?" The answer to that question is yes, and our biblical prescription for life comes from Psalm 6, verses 2. David believed as well, and he says, "Lord, have mercy on me, for I am weak. Heal me, for my bones are troubled." Well, God heals us in His time. It might be through a miracle. It might be through a change in lifestyle, quitting smoking, exercising more, eating better. But we have been promised that God will heal those that have a relationship with Him in His time. Do I really believe that God heals? Yes. So did David. You can believe too. Just claim this relationship with your Lord and Savior. For more, go to our website. That's heartwiseministries.org.
Before we get back to our guest, I want to invite you to interact with Heartwise Ministries. Perhaps you have a question or comment to share. Is there a topic you'd like for us to discuss on this program? Have we helped you in some way with the information or resources we've made available to you each week? If you're a computer person, you're in luck. You can visit the heartwiseministries.org website and leave a message in the contact section. Or you can click on over to Facebook and join our family by liking Heartwise Ministries. Here you can enter your thoughts and suggestions, enjoy Dr. Markham's latest video blogs, and learn more about the many activities of this global outreach. A lot of exciting things happening at Heartwise. Of course, you can call us as well. Here's our phone number for non-medical queries and comments. 423-238-0048. That's 423-238-0048. We're here to serve you. Please feel free to use any of these avenues to communicate with us. Welcome back to the program. I'm your host, Charles Mills. Our guest today, Dr. Michael Greger from nutritionfacts.org. Dr. Greger, tell us about that website. How many people come visit you on a daily basis at nutritionfacts.org?
Well, so we're up to over 2016. We average nearly 3 million views a month.
Oh.
So, yeah, we're really excited. That's the highest annual traffic we've had so far. So every year, more and more people find out about it, more and more people use it as a resource.
Right.
To improve the health of themselves, their families, their communities, so I couldn't be happier.
All right, nutritionfacts.org is the website. Dr. Greger, let's talk about type 1 diabetes. I have people in my family who have it, and I'm sure there are listeners who have it or know someone who does. Make the connection here, because a lot of people are going to be surprised at this. Type 1 diabetes and milk.
Well, yeah, milk and meat, actually. And so type 1 diabetes is an autoimmune disease where your own body destroys the cells in your pancreas that produce insulin. It's often diagnosed in children, adolescents. Basically, if anyone knows of anybody who has the classic trio of symptoms, excessive thirst, hunger, and urination, I mean, those are classic symptoms. They should immediately get tested for type 1 diabetes because their blood sugars are probably spiking. They're doing damage, and so they have to be on insulin for the rest of their lives. And so it's really a blow to the family to get a diagnosis like this because, you know, you miss a few insulin injections. It can be really serious. You mess up an insulin injection. You could have a fatal consequence. And so, you know, your whole life, you're dependent on insulin pumps and injections. And so many researchers just take a step back and say, well, wait a second, what's the cause in the first place? You know, how, because there's no cure for type 1 diabetes. Now, type 2 diabetes, we can cure with a plant-based diet, get people off insulin. But type 1 diabetes, when you have no ability to produce insulin in the first place, then you need to have basically hormone replacement therapy, like insulin replacement therapy, for the rest of your life. And so what can we do to prevent this in the first place? Well, we know it's on the rise around the world, starting around World War II. And the question is, well, why is it higher in some places than in other places? Why would our body start attacking our own cells in the first place? Well, the thought is something called molecular mimicry, where basically a bacteria or virus provokes an immune response which cross-reacts with a similar-looking protein in our pancreas. So we end up, when we attack the bug, our own cells get kind of caught in the friendly fire, kind of the crossfire. So the question is, okay, well, what is our body trying to attack We discovered in the 80s the protein that our body, the specific protein that our body was attacking. In the 90s, we found out, well, it looks awful lot like a protein on a mycobacteria, a class of bacteria that cause diseases like tuberculosis and leprosy. It's not a lot of tuberculosis and leprosy in the first world anymore, which is wonderful. And so you say, well, wait a second. The rates of type 1 diabetes are going up, yet diseases like leprosy are going down. And so what is the connection between the two? Well, there's one mycobacterial infection that is going up and trending up just like our trending cases of type 1 diabetes, and that's a disease called paratuberculosis of livestock. It causes a disease called Yoni's disease, and it's on the rise. In fact, we have an epidemic. 95% of megadairies in the United States come up positive for it. It costs the U.S. industry over $1 billion a year. I mean, it's an epidemic. Anyone in the dairy industry knows about this epidemic of Yoni's disease. And so the concern is that, well, hey, maybe people are getting exposed in the food chain from contaminated milk, milk products, or meat from, you know, infected cattle, sheep, or goats, which harbor this paratuberculosis bacteria. Now, we know that these bacteria survive pasteurization, and the reason we know that is because Wisconsin researchers just went into stores and bought hundreds of pints of retail milk right off store shelves from three of our top milk-producing states. About 3% came back positive for live ParaTB bacteria. So we know we're being exposed. And so if there are people that are genetically susceptible to get this disease and they're drinking this milk or eating meat that's contaminated with this bacteria, it could start this autoimmune cascade and lead to the destruction of part of the pancreas that makes insulin. So the next step was to look for the presence of these bacteria in type 1 diabetics. And indeed, the majority of tested type 1 diabetics have this bacteria in their bloodstream, presumably because they're eating meat or dairy. And so whether it's ground beef, whether it's the milk supply, we're not exactly, we're still trying to tease that out. But that may be the trigger for this disease in the first place. And so it's interesting, the same thing, that the same kind of diet, this plant-based diet, that can reverse type 2 diabetes by getting rid of insulin resistance is the same kind of diet that could prevent type 1 diabetes by preventing this autoimmune reaction by reducing our exposure to this livestock pathogen called paratuberculosis.
Oh my, listener, I invite you to visit nutritionfacts.org. You can put in there, it's searchable, milk and type 1 diabetes, meat and type 1 diabetes. These are on the website. You can learn this a little bit more in detail. Dr. Greger has been kind enough to give us sort of an overview here. But if you go to the website, nutritionfacts.org, and you put in topics, you'll find incredible amounts of information and easy to understand. He makes it easy to understand and helps us along. And I really appreciate that, Dr. Greger. Our time has flown by. We are up for now, but I'm going to have you back again. Is that okay with you?
I would love that. Keep up the wonderful work.
All right, listener, until next time, this is Charles Mills along with Dr. Michael Greger from nutritionfacts.org, inviting you to remain heartwise. Goodbye, everyone. Thank you for joining us today on HeartWise. If you'd like more information on how to build and maintain optimum physical, mental, and spiritual health, log on to heartwiseministries.org. HeartWise is a listener-supported program, and your partnership with us would be greatly appreciated. Once again, our web address is heartwiseministries.org.